Grace, greetings, and welcome to the Deeper Daily Podcast for May 1st, 2017. I'm Paul White. In repeating something we tried in the month of April, we returned to the podcast format of having a guest with us for the next couple of days. We are joined today and tomorrow by Sloan Parker. Sloan is pastor of the Lombard Assembly of God Church in Lombard, Illinois. Now, he and I go all the way back to at least high school, if not a little before that, and our paths of ministry have crossed on many occasions, including a few years where we were fortunate enough to work together in the local church. Aside from being a good friend, I consider Sloan a worthy scholar of the Word, and I'm very excited to present to you a conversation that he and I had recently. Originally, this was to be a Skype recording, but someone, namely me, failed to record it. So Sloan was gracious enough to do it again, and we captured his end of the conversation via phone. So Sloan, let's take up the topic of Israel and how she fits within the discussion of covenants. In particular, let's start with that famous problematic verse, Romans 11:26, all Israel will be saved.
The Apostle Paul says, he makes that statement, all Israel shall be saved. But then to explain what he means, and people often miss this, he quotes Isaiah 59:20, which says, he will come to Zion as Redeemer, to those in Jacob who repent from their sins. Now, I know people often use Romans 11:26 to say that a day is coming in our future when every individual in the contemporary state of Israel will be saved. But that interpretation ignores the context of Romans 11, and it definitely ignores the Old Testament passage, Isaiah 59:20, that Paul quotes to explain what he means. For me, to really understand what Paul is getting at when he says all Israel must be saved, we got to go back to towards the beginning of Israel's history. We can probably enter into the story in Deuteronomy, the last few chapters, Deuteronomy 28 to 30. This is where God, through Moses, at Moab, is reconfirming the old covenant with Israel, just before Israel enters into the promised land. It's also where God first hints at when and why there will one day be a new covenant with Israel. People often miss those last two points.
Catch the audience up, if you would, for a moment on Israel, where we are in the storyline.
The prior generation of Israelites, the Israelites that God had brought out of Egypt and across the Red Sea, we know the story. They had grumbled and complained against God and against Moses. So God has allowed them to wander around in the wilderness for 40 years so that that generation of Israelites could die off. What should have taken about a week for them to travel ends up taking 40 years. And it's because they didn't trust in God. And they grumbled and complained, and so now God is not going to allow them to enter into Canaan. He is letting them wander around the wilderness until they die, and then he is going to reestablish the covenant with their children and grandchildren, the next generation of Israelites. And that's what's happening in Deuteronomy 28 to 30. They have reached Moab, and this next generation of Israelites are standing on the edge of the promised land, about to enter. And so Deuteronomy 28 to 30 is Moses reestablishing the covenant with this new generation of Israelites. And the gist of the terms of the covenant go something like this. If they will worship Yahweh, the God of Israel, alone, and take care of the less fortunate among them, they will be blessed. And he even tells what the blessing will be. God will send rain upon their land. The land will be fruitful as a result, and it will produce food. And so then they can stay in the land and have food and God's protection. If, however, they break the covenant by worshiping other gods and failing to care for the poor and the widow, they will be cursed. And the curse is the exact opposite of the blessing. God will withhold the rain, their crops will die, and they will be driven from the promised land for lack of food. And then once they're out of the promised land and away from God's protection, they will become slaves in the lands whose gods they had worshipped. But that's what's being stipulated in Deuteronomy 28 to 30. And as that section comes to a close in chapter 30, in the first 10 verses, we find out that this is not going to be an either-or situation. It's not going to be either the blessing or the curse. Instead, these ancient Israelites are going to experience both the blessings and the curse. In other words, after experiencing God's blessing in the land for an undisclosed amount of time, they will eventually break the covenant. They will eventually worship the gods of the other nations. They will fail to take care of the poor and their widows. And as a result, they will experience the curse of not keeping the covenant, which means they will be exiled from the promised land and driven into the hands or into the lands of their neighbors.
I know you're fond of using the story of Adam and Eve in the garden to illustrate this. Could you do that for us?
Adam and Eve is this story in miniature. With Adam and Eve, God creates these special people of His. He prepares a fruitful land for them, the Garden of Eden. He places them in the land. He gives them a command, which boils down to, if they will trust God, they will stay in the land, and they will eat the fruit of the garden, and they'll have a close relationship with God, be safe. But if they don't trust God, if they break His command, they will be exiled from the garden. Well, that is Israel's story too. That's exactly the terms of the covenant in Deuteronomy 28 to 30. So, you know, it boils down to, if they will keep the covenant, they will stay in the land, they will be blessed in the land. But if they worship the other gods, or if they don't take care of the marginalized, if they don't keep the covenant, they will be driven from the land and away from God's centralized presence. That's what's being stated in Deuteronomy 28 to 30. And as Deuteronomy 30, 1 to 10 explains, this is not just a possibility. It's not an either or, like I just said. It is something that is going to happen. They are going to be exiled eventually. At some point, Moses is telling them, you will worship the gods of the nations and you will be driven out of this promised land and you will become exiles in the lands of your neighbors. But then he continues, after that has happened, after you have been driven from the promised land and scattered among the nations, whoever among them will repent, God is going to restore their fortunes. That's Deuteronomy 30, verse 3. Moreover, God will circumcise their hearts so that they will love the Lord their God. That's verse 6. Moses is here hinting at the new covenant, which God will reestablish with Israel on the other side of exile. And I think it's important that we articulate that the new covenant is something God reestablishes with Israel. But we tend to have this caricature where we think of the old covenant as being related to Israel and the new covenant as being related to Gentiles and us. That's not, strictly speaking, the case. The new covenant will be God reestablishing the covenant with Israel on the other side of exile. And we'll see how that plays out in a little bit. And we can see this more clearly if we move to Jeremiah, where the terms of the new covenant are stipulated. In Jeremiah 31, when Jeremiah is prophesying, the blessings and the curses of the old covenant have all happened, just as Moses had said they would in Deuteronomy 30, 1 to 10. Israel has been driven from the promised land because they worshiped other gods and didn't take care of their poor. And they have been scattered as exiles among the land, or in the land of their neighbors. So now, Jeremiah is telling them, just as Moses had prophesied, God is going to regather some of His people. He's going to rebuild Israel, so to speak. And here, verses 27 to 34 of Jeremiah 31 are key. According to those verses, God is going to rebuild Israel, but not in the way He did in the beginning. That's verse 32. If you read verses 29 to 30, what it shows is that the problem with the old covenant, and this is important, was that it was made with the entire nation of Israel, regardless of individual faithfulness. But the new covenant, however, Jeremiah is saying, will not be made that way. It won't be done that way. It will only be made with the faithful in Israel. Thus, the faithful in Israel, and what I mean by that, the faithful, are those who never worshipped the gods of the nations, those who did try to take care of the poor and the widows. They are the faithful in terms of the covenant. The faithful in Israel will no longer have cause to use this proverb. This is what Jeremiah says. The parents have eaten sour grapes and the children's teeth are falling out. It's really kind of a clever proverb. But what it is these particular Israelites who are saying, why are we being punished along with the wicked? We didn't worship the other gods. We took care of the poor and the widow and the marginalized. But we are suffering right alongside the wicked. Why? And Jeremiah is saying, in the day that God establishes his new covenant, they won't be able to say that anymore. Because in the day of the new covenant, individual faithfulness or individual faithlessness will determine membership in Israel rather than nationality. In other words, covenant members will be identified not by a circumcision in the flesh, but by circumcision of the heart. You can actually go to, there's other places, but Ezekiel 36 is one that comes immediately to mind, where Ezekiel talks about the same thing. But he'll actually say, in those days, the members of the new covenant can be identified because they have God's very own spirit. He will circumcise their hearts. He will give them his own spirit. Well, that's exactly what happens in the new covenant, doesn't it? Well, as we well know, this new covenant is finally formally inaugurated with the arrival of Jesus.
We're going to jump in there and stop for today on the podcast. It's been a good discussion with our friend Sloan Parker as he's discussing the nation of Israel and how it relates to the new covenant. At this point, we're really dealing with the phrase from Romans 11 that all Israel will be saved. What does that mean? And he's been walking through some of the way of viewing that through the Old Testament on into the New Testament. We'll get into more of the New Testament discussion tomorrow, and he's just making that transition in the conversation now into Christ as Messiah and him pouring his Spirit out upon all flesh. And so the conversation gets a little more conversational tomorrow. I like to let the guest go and just share all the things that is on their heart. So we'll continue our conversation tomorrow here on the DDP with Sloan Parker. Until then, hope you have a great day. God bless.